Indian passengers are required to attend safety drill in the multicultural area.
Lucky in a way, working with a newspaper that allowed in my contract there was a trip each year somewhere interesting. That was a knockout.
Nice.
And
one.
So 2 weeks with some accreditation from a newspaper. So I really do think that it's got something to do with this film and the general attitude, because I went to all sorts of controversial places in Southeast Asia, which at the time, 60s, when I started, was mystery land. You know, we just didn't register. We went straight to Europe, as I did. Mm. But so I did a book about Southeast Asia, and you get a whiff of whether this world could ever connect with our world, you know.
And so way back then, you were probably seeing on the front line some of the poverty that was resulting from the West's insatiable desire for growth and expansion.
Exactly. It was pretty crude, and at the time it was just considered, well, these people have, you know, they're that far behind, they've got to do it the way we did. And then you realize, you know, from books that I've read recently, the books that we base this film on, in a way, George Monbiot was putting these cases, and Arundhati Roy was telling a different story, that actually these countries were often in the state they are because of systems that we had in place and have always had in place. I mean, the colonial story, we see various versions of that, film versions and novelizations of what we did, and it comes out, as you know, from our high school history, that, you know, it was a huge adventure, and we were civilizing these places, leaving railways and the Bible, and so that's the story we got. They say, well, yeah, well, they got independence in the 60s, 50s and 60s, and we got out of those places, and they had flags and celebrations, but we left, according to George Monbiot and Arundhati Roy, we left a big set of apparatus, systems, economic currency dealing operations that have left them, well, have been to our advantage, not theirs.
That's right. And on the Renegade Economist, we often call that monopoly capitalism.
But out here, there was a clear knowledge at the end of the First World War that oil was going to prime the pumps of the economy of Europe for decades or hundreds of years to come.
Majority of all wars throughout history have been resource wars. They've been involved in land, they've been involved with oil, involved with riches of all kinds, gold and silver and minerals and all sorts of different things which people want to get their hands on. And increasingly they will centre around depleting resources, oil being a classic one, we'll see many more. Water will be a cause of war.
Seemed an obvious thing, as well as to use people like Robert Fisk and Tariq Ali, that we should talk to the people, young people who are actually live there and have got to work this thing out from their perspective. And so we interviewed as many students as we could in two trips to Lebanon, one to Cairo, and then the MIT, London universities and Los Angeles University, talked to students and got various versions of their versions of history of colonialism, which were slightly different to ours. And they are smart people. Well, the people, I mean, they were university kids, and they certainly knew about the IMF and the World Bank and Security Council, and knew that it was loaded against them, pretty much. I mean, they're not crazy. I don't think they were crazy.
Yes, one of the points we have to get across, though, is this is not your average documentary. You use your wit and humour through beautiful animation, and the narration is quite sarcastic in many ways, and that helps get across these complex issues.
Yeah, that's the an old satire trick, I suppose. It's a trick, but it's the device to get some of these complex, and as soon as you mention economics or finance, your eyes glaze over, because it is we don't want to know about it. We just trust these people to be doing it, or they tell us it's the market anyway, and they're forces that we just have to live with. That's the story we've been given for so long, and it's the one we've decided after a bit of experimenting. That's it. So how to make these stories, how to even give them an image is interesting. So that's what animation can do. We just say, well, this set of pipes and pulleys and these, that's the IMF at work or something. In fact, we had a huge mechanical or steel boot going up and down for the IMF, and we just write IMF on it, and people say, all right, well, yeah, I think they say, yeah, perhaps it is something like that. That's the theory of satire anyway. You put these outrageous propositions in, people say, yeah, that's a joke, because I know it's satire, because I've seen the funny faces. And then the next step is to say, wait a minute, maybe it is something like that. If you put Arundhati Roy straight after that and hear her version, you think, well, maybe it's worse than what he's drawn, you know, even.
What the committee feared finally happened. ADEC objected to the food smells, loud sitar, and multi-language trading after hours. The researchers located a well-hidden logbook listing a series of radical BDEC noise control procedures.
Well, I did a money machine for the ABC, and we had a film called The Money Game way back, for an hour doco, sort of satire. And yeah, the idea of a machine is just to give some kind of image to abstract conceptual stuff. So we had five players around a weird heap of, you know, tabletop machinery that looked impossible but actually did affect one another. So it connected people, because you know we draw cartoons day by day and they don't seem to connect to anything. They are just whatever the news says, wherever it is, it just looks like history and economics is just a random that writes random force or a set of story that writes itself. And when you put it together and connect people the way Monbiot and Fisk do, and these kids in the university in Cairo do, you see it's connected. So the machine and the animated version of it, I've done a law machine, for instance, which does much the same. It's just another metaphor, and that's what we have to live by.
And so what we are always told is the IMF and the World Trade Organization, the Washington Consensus, is the best way forward. But through animation and through some smart images you've used, you draw that connection, and the cartoons add impact to these delicate topics that often, you know, when you see similar documentaries leave you in tears, whereas this one often is a smile, you know, a bit of a smug smirk on your face. Yes. when you can see through the quagmire through how you've put it. Yes. Together. Certainly important.
Yeah, it is. I think you need more and more people expect, if you're going to do a feature, there's a feature expectation of a film. You're not going to listen to people talking. Unless they're really stunningly brilliant for an hour and a half, we don't do that anymore. You've got to do it in a few seconds. And you want to see a picture, you want to see a good picture, a dramatic picture. So we had a few concessions to that expectation of what people in cinemas need, and animation can do it. I mean, some people would have trouble, I imagine, saying, oh, well, is that really, you know, is that really the way the world's arranged? You know, an upper deck and a lower deck? Cause no one wants to know that anymore. We're all stakeholders. We're all on the same deck. Just some people are luckier than others. Or the market is going to work it out anyway, where it's wrong. So, yeah, I think entertainment level has to be there somewhere, and that's the big judgment, you know, how many jokes do you put in to keep people sitting in the cinema still?